series. We did this last summer, and it was a very helpful time, I thought. It allowed me to hear what was in your heart and mind and allowed me to address things. So today we begin the series, and I've gotten lots of good questions. So the next 6 weeks or so are already planned, but that will leave, I think I have 3 or 4 more openings. So, by the way, are the Ask the Pastor forms still available? They're in the bulletin, or? Okay, so if you have a question, I may not be able to address them all if we just have too many, but I will do my very best. And today the question that has been addressed is the Genesis creation story believable? Now, I would ask you not to walk out on me during the sermon, because I'm going to say some things that are hard to swallow, especially at first. But please let me finish before you pass final judgment, okay? I want to start by talking to you about my experience as a deer hunter. And I'm sure there's animal lovers here, so you're not going to like this story. But I ask you, stay through my whole sermon, okay? Unless you have to go to the bathroom, you have to leave or something. I won't. Anyway, here's my first experience deer hunting was in the church that I started in Napanee. The whole church was full of people who were hunters and fishermen and outdoorsmen and stuff. And so, of course, I got drawn into that kind of pastime. So my friend Les took me deer hunting, and he would take me way into the woods where I'd be just lost forever if he didn't come back and get me. But the idea was he would stand me somewhere where he knew deer would run because he'd grown up there, and he would walk around the woods and get the deer moving, and hopefully one would run past me and I would shoot him. That was the plan. First time we're out there, sure enough, I suddenly hear something running towards me, and I have my gun ready, you know, and I'm nervous as can be. And it was a bear. And I didn't have a bear license. I don't know whether you're supposed to shoot a bear, climb a tree, run. I had no idea. I had forgotten to ask, what do you do when you see a bear? The good thing was, and by the way, the wind was blowing towards me, so the bear didn't smell me. And the bear came plodding up to about the width of this room here. And I had my gun on him because I thought, well, I'm not going down without a fight. But when he saw me, the bear goes and turned and ran like crazy. So that was my first deer hunting experience. Not very heroic. Anyway, a deer did come by. I had never seen a deer in the wild. I wanted to shoot it, and I was hoping like crazy that it was a deer. And it ran past me again, not too much further than about the wall away. I picked up, and when you deer hunt, you just stand very, very still, and it's kind of freezing in November. And I shot it just below the front shoulders, right through the heart and lungs, and it died instantly. It just went, and it was dead instantly. It was great for the hunting party. We had the deer, great meat that winter. Next year, I was out with him. He put me in the same spot. And this time, the deer that ran in front of me was a long ways away, like maybe to the other side of the street from here. And I have very limited experience using my gun. So I held the gun. I aimed it a little bit above the deer. It was running really fast through the woods, way into the woods. And I shot a little bit above the deer, thinking that the bullet would drop, and I was above it and so on. And after I shot, I couldn't see it anymore. And I didn't know whether I had got it or whether it had just run another direction. So I went running down into the woods, and there's the deer. I had broken its back. I'd shot it right through the back. So its back legs were paralyzed. It was on its front legs, but it doesn't matter. It's only an animal, right? And it was on its front legs, and it looked at me, and it cried. But it's just an animal, right? there's this deer crying, broken back. I shot it right away, dead, so that it wouldn't suffer. That was the second deer experience. The third time I was out, this time I was in a different spot, and they were out, and a deer came up, and just like a ghost, I do not know how she got up there, but there she was, about as far as Thomas. She was standing there, and when you're hunting, you're dressed in orange so nobody shoots you, but they can't see you. They don't see color. And I picked up the gun and I had it on her, and she looked at me and her ears went like this. And she tilted her head. And she looked at me. What is that? And I had my gun on her. But it's only an animal, right? It's just an animal. But I couldn't shoot her. I said, go, get out of here, run, get out of here, get out of here. And she looked and she turned and ran just like a ghost off into the woods. That night when I got back and I told my hunting party what had happened, they were angry at me. One of the guys in the hunting party was a pastor in a church that it was a country church, and the church couldn't afford to pay him, and he had children. And he was counting on deer meat to feed his family that winter. And I was the only one in the group that saw a deer, and I didn't shoot it. I couldn't shoot it. And so they were angry at me that I'd been part of the party. It's only an animal, and I didn't shoot it. I have two cats now. Last year they were kittens, but now they're cats, and it's interesting to see their personalities. One of them is very, very socially withdrawn. And this cat, I have to push myself on her. She doesn't want to be touched or petted. I have to push myself on her to be sure she doesn't become antisocial. And I'm loving her whenever I can. And finally, I get her into my arms and she'll purr. My other cat is really outgoing. And it'll sit there. See, I'm working on my laptop. And it'll sit in front of me and it'll go up on its hind legs. Don't look at your computer. Look at me. Play with me. Come to me. This cat always wants me there. I've really fallen in love with my cats. I did not know that cats would make such great pets. And every time I put them in a little carrying case and I take them to the vet for their shots or whatever, I think about that day when I'm going to have to take the last trip to the vet. And my cat is going to be very, very sick, I hope, 15 years from now. And this little cat or cats that I've taught to trust me, I'm going to put them in that carrying case. One more time. And take it to the vet. But it's only an animal, right? Who cares? It's only an animal. And the vet will put it to sleep. I am not looking forward to that trip. Other people, like Pastor Rhonda tells me, she had a cat, and when she went through that, she said she would never have a cat again because it's just not worth the pain of watching it die. Now, I know, I warned you that I was going to shock you this morning, and I'll talk to Teresa. I'm sorry about that. I know she's an animal lover. But let me tell you, if you're a Christian and you believe in the theory of evolution, you are an absolute walking contradiction. You do not understand anything about God and about His ways if you believe in evolution. Because here's the theory of evolution. The theory of evolution is that over millions of years, animals began to evolve. And the only way the process works is if they die, right? Generation after generation, not only do they have to die so that the animal can improve, supposedly, by mutation eventually, but also it's the survival of the fittest. So animals kill each other. And there's great hostility built into creation. And it's only the tough one that survives. So, for example, if you've seen the movie out on the big cats in Africa, has anybody seen that movie? It's a documentary. And it shows the fighting that goes on between the big lions as to who's going to be the alpha male and what he's going to do to the children that are from the other male and so on. It's very, very terrible. If you have any love in your heart for animals, nature is pretty mean. So let me ask you this. I know they're only animals. But the God that you know and love and trust, when he created the world after his heart and image and after his pleasure, did he build into that death and destruction and competition and hatred from animal to animal? Or is our God a God of life and not death? Is he a God who loves animals just like he, maybe not in the same way he loves people, but he loves and takes pleasure in his creation? If you believe in evolution, even theistic evolution is you don't believe the creation story, couldn't have happened. So you believe that it happened over millions of years, but just that God was in control of the process. It was theistic evolution, that God step by step made evolution happen, but it's him that did it. What kind of a God do you have? You have a God who created death, who created a system where the only way a good creation could come about is he brought all kinds of carnage and death into it. You believe that? Is that the God you worship? That is not at all the God that the Bible introduces us to. The Bible introduces us to a God who is a God of love and grace and kindness. He's a giver of life, not the starter of death. In fact, God warned our first forefathers, if you sin, you will die. Death will start if you sin, if you don't obey me. When Darwin went to the Galapagos Islands, one of the first things he saw, and it's just teeming with life, was he happened to be there when the eggs of a turtle hatched. And down from the upper part of the beach came hundreds of little tiny baby turtles with their little feet trying so hard to get to the water, running like mad. And guess what? There's birds there, and they see, ah, dinner! And the whole place is covered with birds eating all those little turtles, and about three of them made it to the water. And then they get to the water, and then those little turtles have to swim from the shore till they can get under some seaweed. So now they're doing like a triathlon, right? They get to the water, and then they got to swim like mad. Now they're much more comfortable, but then there are fish in the water. So here's this mother turtle goes and produces 100 to 300 little ones, goes to all that trouble, and maybe three make it to the water, and then maybe one makes it to the seaweed. And so Darwin, whose theology was maybe better than ours, because Christians as a whole, at least when I go to the seminary, I'm the only one there that believes the creation story, it seems. Darwin said, God can't have done that. Look at all this carnage. Look at all this terrible killing. Is this the God that I was taught to believe in? And that was part of his journey to believe that this can't be God. This had to happen naturally, accidentally. At least he believed if God did it, it wouldn't work this way. Here is why the theory of evolution seems plausible. It seems plausible because it assumes there's no God, and we're here. You put those two things together. There is no God, and we are here. So we got here somehow. So they've come up with a theory. All right, how could chance bring this about? We'll give it 15 billion years, all the time it needs, and see if chance could bring this about. It's plausible because we're here, and you don't believe in God. Secondly, it's plausible because we do live in a dog-eat-dog world. The survival of the fittest is a reality. It's the way that our world works. It doesn't explain how it got that way, but that is the way the world works. And so to say that the tough survive, that's true. And the third thing that evolution believes is that the processes that we see and feel and measure in our universe is what brought us here, and they will continue forever. So if you have no God, and we see a dog-eat-dog world, and the only processes that exist are the ones that we see, I could see coming to the conclusion that we evolved. But if you believe the Bible, then you have a different worldview. Let me ask you, what shapes your worldview? What is it that you allow to shape how you see the world, where we've come from and where we're going? Do you believe there's no God? Or do you believe in the God of the Bible? Because if you believe in the God of the Bible, I don't think he's the God that created death. And don't tell me it was only animals. It's horrible. I told you that terrible story about deer hunting. That was 25 years ago, and it's in my head like a vision, an image I cannot get rid of. And it was the end of my deer hunting. Don't tell me it's just an animal. Don't tell me my cats are just animals. It's horrible when they die, right? If you've lost a pet, a dog or a cat. It's horrible. So what shapes your worldview? Do you have a God of life and of giving, or do you have a worldview with no God in it, or some other kind of God? Is your worldview shaped by what the Bible teaches, or is your worldview shaped by what other people think? So what I'm going to say today, I know this isn't going to be popular, it's not going to make me the whole city rush to hear a story about real creation. Nobody's going to believe that. But that's because we don't believe in the God of the Bible, and we really don't believe the Bible. So I want to just remind you of some things about a biblical worldview that insists on the creation story. And I'm not here to prove it from science. Can't do that anyway. You know a statement? A man convinced against his will is a man of the same opinion still. Heard that expression? People are going to believe what they want to believe. They're not. You can convince them. We could prove that this scientific evidence supports creation. No, they're not going to believe it anyway, just because they don't want to. It probably works the other way around. Because I know my God and I believe his word, I don't care, all the science in the world is not going to convince me that God didn't make us. But here are some things I want to suggest to you about your worldview. Number one, God does exist, and he's glorious and all-powerful, and he's full of love and good works, and he's all-wise and all-knowing, and he's infinitely great. How big is this universe? How big is this universe? And the Bible says that our God made it. I don't think we have no ability to comprehend how great our God is. And Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3 says this, by faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. That's the very first verses in Hebrews that's talking about all the things we believe by faith. And this says, we believe the creation story. Why? Because we have faith. Because God has revealed what he did, and by faith, we accept it. Just like if we went through the rest of the book of Hebrews 11, by faith we believe Abraham and his wife had a child when she was 90 years old, way past childbearing. Right? If you're a Christian, don't you believe that? And we believe that Moses, when he led the people out of Egypt, we believe that the Red Sea parted so that they could walk through and the Egyptians were drowned. If you're a Christian, you probably believe that. We believe that when Joshua led the people into the promised land, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been marched around for 7 days. We believe that. It doesn't make sense, but we believe it. We even believe, if you can believe it, one day when Joshua was having this great big war and there wasn't enough time, he prayed, God, stop the sun. And it says the sun stopped moving for an extra day. It stayed there, like the day went 2 days long. And if you're a Christian and you believe the Bible, you believe that. If you're a Christian, you believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Now, how possible is that? That the God who created the universe actually came to earth as a man. How possible is that? Well, we believe it. We believe that he rose from the dead. How possible is that? That's not possible unless God did it. So, our worldview is shaped by the God that we believe in. He does things that are spectacular, that are way beyond what we can imagine. And so it's not inconsistent, it's consistent that we believe that he made us like the scripture says he did. Here's my second observation about our worldview. Creation was excellent. It was beautiful and peaceful. There was no death. There was no hostility. No dog-eat-dog world. When God created paradise, it was paradise. And here's the prophet Isaiah talking about what God's holy mountain would look like. When God makes a new heaven and new earth, this is what he has in mind. The wolf will dwell with the lamb. See that? No survival of the fittest there. The leopard will lie down with the young goat. And the calf and the young lion and the fatling together. Picture those, the calf and the young lion and the I guess a fatling is some animal you're raising for food, and they're going to play together. A little boy will lead them. The cow and the bear will graze. Hear that? The bear will no longer be a carnivore. We don't want death anymore. We don't want to eat meat anymore. Their young will lie down together, and the lion, no carnivore. He will eat straw like the ox. The nursing child will play by the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child will put his hand on the viper's den. They will not hurt or destroy. Did you hear that? When God creates, they will not hurt or destroy. They will not hurt or kill one another in all my holy mountain. Why? For the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the water covers the sea. When God is present in his fullness, there is not death and destruction and corruption and hatred. There's beauty and peace. Here's the third thing that contributes to our biblical worldview. Sin ruined everything. It wasn't that God created a world of hostility and death. God warned our forefathers, if you sin, there's going to be huge consequences. There's going to be something you've never heard of before, death. And the serpent comes and says to the woman, you will surely not die. God just knows that you'll become wise like him. He was pretty smart. Oh, don't believe that stuff about death. Creation is beautiful. That's not going to happen. The Bible says that when they sinned, the process of death began. Romans 5, verse 12 says this, therefore, just as through one man, sin entered the world, and how did death enter? Death entered through sin. That is what exposed the world to death, not God's creation, but man's failure. So don't tell me there's been millions of years of death and corruption and fighting and hostility. Don't tell me in God he created the world that way. Death only came as a result of sin. That isn't what God intended at all. And so death spread to all men because all sinned. And go on in Romans, it tells us it didn't just stop with men. Romans 8 says, for the creation was subjected to futility, the creation itself, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it. It was when Adam sinned, they all went with him. In hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption. God, set us free from this world of fighting and death and hostility that's in nature and in mankind, into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth until now. And here is one more for you and for me. The coming new heaven and the new earth. If it's true, as the scripture says, that God is going to dissolve the universe and create a new one, where righteousness dwells, there will be no death there. If that is what God is going to do, is it easier to create something or to destroy it? Is it easier to build a building or to tear one down? Have you ever tried to tear down a building? Demolition is a pretty hard job. It's great to build a 30-story apartment. You want to get it down? God has created this whole universe. If you believe, if you're a Christian and you believe that Jesus is coming again, we're going to rise from the dead, he's going to make all things new, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth, how could you believe that and not believe that he did it in the first place? Right? That's so inconsistent. It's the very fact of our hope for eternity and a new heaven and a new earth is only consistent with believing with a God big enough to do that. And if he's big enough to do it down the road, he's big enough to do it back when he started it, right? So the whole biblical worldview from start to finish is like this. An infinitely wonderful God made a perfect creation. Sin entered and ruined everything. God sent his son to redeem. If you were in the Bible class I did here, you'll have heard this illustration. But you remember the jet that landed in the Potomac River? It just was moved yesterday to a museum. Think about all the people that they got on that plane, and they didn't get on that plane to go and crash in a river, did they? They got on that plane to fly, I forget, from Georgia or to Georgia or whatever. But when they got on that plane, picture somebody's there going home for their wedding. Somebody's there going home for their daughter's birthday. Somebody's going for a job interview. They're all in life and they're taking this flight because they're very important things that they have to do when they get there. But when they get up in the air and they hit the flock of geese, and they suddenly hear the motor shut down. Silent. That must have been eerie, eh? Hearing deathly silence. The pilots are up there trying to start. Nothing will start. Suddenly, everything changes. Nobody anymore is worried about being late for their wedding. They're not being worried about being late for their daughter's birthday. They're not worried about missing a job interview. The only thing they care now is, can you get me down safely? And the pilot surprises the whole world and lands that plane on the river. And everybody, unbelievable, they get out desperate to survive, right? One guy came apparently as they got out in the wing and he was just wearing his underwear. Because he thought, worst come to worst, he's going to swim to shore. Like he left everything except his underwear. That's a picture of what's happened. When God created the world, he created something beautiful. It was like a flight, we're going to paradise. But something went desperately wrong, and now the challenge is, how do we get out of this plane alive? This journey is not going to get where we were going. We're going to go to paradise. We're not going to get there. The plane has hit a problem, and we're going down. Can we survive this? Everything changes. That's the biblical worldview, that creation was perfect. Sin ruined everything. Christ has provided us salvation. Now, how do we become part of it? Preparing for a new heaven and a new earth. My time is gone. I had other things to say. I just want to say a couple things about creation science. If it is true that God created us, then the creation model should at least be consistent with the scientific evidence. I'm not saying the scientific evidence will prove everybody that we were created. I'm not saying that it'll prove it, but I'm saying that the evidence should at least be consistent. It should work at least, right? And let me just mention a couple of things that are still very, very real with respect to that. Actually, right now, the theory of evolution is, to a certain extent, it's a smokescreen. People are saying we can't teach anything but evolution in our schools. It's not the scientists, that's the politician and the decision makers. Scientists, many, are struggling with the theory of evolution now because there's so much that doesn't work well. We know way more about DNA than we knew 30 years ago, but now it's pretty well. Scientists used to believe that there is inanimate life and there is animate life, that organic chemistry is life, and non-organic chemistry is just no life. Now, it's pretty well concluded that the most intricate part of our makeup, the DNA that makes us, is not living at all. They're just molecules. That's all they are. But those molecules are organized in a such a way that there's a blueprint built into those molecules. And when those molecules draw proteins to them, and they do it just the way the chemistry works, it creates something that looks like you and me. Somebody put a code into a whole string of just chemical molecules. Somebody put a code in there, and when that code begins to work, it produces people and animals and plants. And one of the things that's absolutely remarkable about DNA now is that, and I'm not at all a biologist, but I've been just reading, that the way that the molecules work, they all have little connectors on the left and the right side to pull proteins. And DNA, at least human DNA, they're all on the left-hand side. All the connectors, they're all left-handed. A non-Christian biologist, so perplexed by this, the only thing he could say was, maybe God is left-handed. The way that our DNA works is just beyond description. Who put that code into the secret place of the cells in your body? Who put that code there so that it keeps reproducing the cells that you need to be who you are? There's really no explanation for the unthinkable organization in our very molecular structure. Who taught human beings how to speak? Who taught us to be able to communicate abstract ideas like we're doing now? Who put love in our hearts? Who put all the metaphysical things that we experience, even spirits that we, evil spirits and good angels, who put all those around us that really our society is becoming more and more willing to see? And here's the fossil record. We talk about the fossil record that supposedly proves that man evolved from lower beings. You know what Darwin himself said? He said, I frankly agree that the fossil record is one of the greatest hindrances to the new theory I'm proposing. And here's why. You can go back in the fossil record, say a billion years to the trilobite age. And the thing about it is, from the very beginning, every fossil you find is classifiable. The forms and types that we know now are the same forms and types that existed at the beginning. They suddenly, boom, they're there. And yet the fact that you can classify them, they're not midstream things. They're not like halfway, was this this or was it this? Fossils give evidence of things that we can know and understand. It's just there were lots more forms than there are now. And also, the fossil record has sudden appearance of animals. Yes, there's dinosaurs, and you read the book of Job. Job seems to have known dinosaurs. But they're there. But the thing is, where did they come from? Like, they're just there. Every plant and animal form, they're just suddenly, boom, they're there. The fossil record does not, I mean, they're look for one intermediate form that's supposed to show the transition. And what are their maybe five that they argue, like Archaeopteryx, the bird, that bird reptile, they're just not there. So I'm not saying this proves creation. What I'm saying is it's consistent with creation. That if God made it, there would be forms that we would recognize, because he said they'll produce after their kind, and they would be there instantly. Here's another one. Fossils don't even form by dead animals, right? You see a dead animal, is there going to be a fossil? No. It's going to get eaten by a carnivore, like, you know, by scavengers. You don't even get fossils unless they get buried really fast. And the biblical view is that there was a flood that covered the whole world and tore up all of the topography and buried everything. Everything died. And here we find fossils in the millions together, all crammed together. How did that ever happen? Well, it's consistent with the biblical story that there was a flood that wiped out the earth. The Grand Canyon is, I forget how deep, a mile deep or something, and all the strata of the so-called geological process are supposed to be there. But here's the thing. How did what on earth caused the Grand Canyon? I know that there's a little river running through it, but there is no scientist in the world thinks that that little river created the Grand Canyon. This thing is cut right down into the heart of the earth. It seems the only thing that could have happened was a massive ocean of water was suddenly channeled down one thing, and it just wiped out everything in its way, and it cut this perfect window into all the supposed geological stages. Anyway, what I'm saying is I'm not here to try to convince anybody that science proves creation. I'm here to say what exists is consistent with what the Bible teaches. Now, if you're a kind of person that would really like more information, I want to recommend one book to you. It's called Creation, The Facts of Life. It's written by a guy named Gary Parker. I think I forgot to put it up here. But anyway, again, Gary Parker. It's called Creation, The Facts of Life. You can download it for free off the internet. It's 240 pages. You can get a PDF version. You don't even have to pay for it. Gary Parker was an evolutionist, and the more he studied it, he became convinced it couldn't happen. So he became a Christian, and this is a very good first-hand book. There are two websites that I encourage anybody who's seeking information to look at. One is called Answers in Genesis. .org. That's all one word. AnswersInGenesis.org. And there is one more called ICR.org. ICR stands for Institute for Creation Research. There are two websites where very, very prominent, trustworthy scientists are gathering information together. But I'm not here as a scientist. I'm not. I'm here as a theologian, as a Christian. And I'm saying to you, the God that we believe in did not intend death. The God that we believe in created life. Sin brought death, and God created the world for us to live in. Now, I want to finish with one thing where I started today. Why would I, who absolutely love animals and nature, why would I ever have gone hunting? I want to tell you why I went hunting, okay? It wasn't really because the people that I was in Hay Bay hunted and so I did what they did, because I had to make my own choice. That created the opportunity. Here's why I went hunting. Genesis chapter 9, verse 3 says this. This was after the flood. God said to Noah, way to go, Bethany. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. See, in God's paradise, he didn't give them the right to eat meat. The Garden of Eden, it was fruit and nuts and vegetables, whatever was in the garden. That's what he gave them. But after sin came in and God destroyed the world and let it start all over again, he knew that things were different now. human life would not be in the Garden of Eden. It's different. And so at the end of the flood, and God restarts human life or recommissions them for life, he gives them a new option. And the new option was meat. He said, everything that's alive shall be food for you. I have chosen to let the Bible frame my thinking. I have chosen to have a biblical worldview. I will never be a vegetarian. I will never let my heart go in the direction, and I'm not necessarily connecting this with vegetarian, but I am never going to go in the direction of Hinduism, where we see animals are just as important as human beings. I am never going to go there. The Bible teaches me that God made man in his image. Man is a unique, special creation. And the animals were given to us for our good, and God gave them to us for meat. And so I rather forced myself to go hunting, to force myself against my own inclinations to have a biblical worldview. I say, Lord, you created meat for us. You ordained this. I don't understand it. You can't believe how it hurts me to see that deer. But, Lord, you tell me that this is right. And I'm not God. I only know that I trust your word, and I'm going to trust you to the end. I'm going to let your word shape my heart and my thoughts and everything about me. So I deliberately went hunting just to be biblical. Now, it doesn't mean you have to go hunting to be biblical. But for me, to choose that God's word will shape my worldview, nothing else will shape my worldview, that's why I did it. And I'm not trying to please you or to be popular or anything. I have one goal in my heart, is to please my God, to know his word, to live by it, and to teach it. That's what I live for. And so my little cats, I have them, and I know the day's coming when I'm going to take them to the vet. And when they look at me that last time, that's going to kill me. But I'm going to trust my God that God knows what he's doing, and that he gave them to me for that period of time, and it was a blessing. But I can let them go because God has made them and he's ordained that life would be as it is. Now, I'm sorry. How many people have I totally offended today? I did wonder about whether I should be so shocking. But I wanted to shock you. Because I think Christians are inconsistent. I think we cheerfully believe that we evolve. We're following the world, and we don't realize the implications of that. That means that's the kind of God you believe in. And that doesn't work. So there's my best shot. Now, I want to close with not a song for us to sing, but Bethany, can you find that? I just want you to enjoy your God and what he has done, and the blessing that we experience, and then we'll close in prayer.